Welcome to All Things Trek here on TrekRadio.net. I'm Bob.
And I'm Oren.
And Oren's incessantly arguing with the chat room in regards to Kapwa and
I'm not arguing,
Kwonos.
I'm just mocking at this point. Because
oh, you're mocking, okay.
You know, people in the chat room were exchanging a good hearty Kapwa, which I can appreciate, right?
Yeah.
But every time anyone brings up the Klingon, anything Klingon with, like, pronunciation and stuff, I immediately think of how Star Trek Online thinks the Klingon homeworld is called Kwonos. Because it starts with a Q, right? So obviously it must make a Qu sound. And, you know, of course, Kapla is spelled with a Q. So obviously it's pronounced Kwapla.
Like, Kwapla. I mean,
like, no, like, duh, right? That's Star Trek Online has spoken. It just boggles my mind how they arrived at that. It's clearly Kronos. You don't need to know a whole lot about Star Trek to know it's pronounced Kronos. It's just a thing. It's like if they started pronouncing it Borg. It'd be like, what? Why?
What? How'd you get Borg?
Borg. Well, the G, it makes a J sound. Obviously. I mean,
if there was an E.
Theoretically, it could make that sound, but it doesn't.
What word has a G in it that makes the J sound? That doesn't have the E.
Bob, it was an example, okay?
It was a terrible example, though, because...
it wasn't really so much a point about language, it was a point about that it's just a very... It's a Star Trek word that for some reason they decided to mispronounce for no reason. And it's not like it's okay. A weird, obscure word we only ever heard in one episode.
True. But so, guess who got $50 worth of Amazon gift card yesterday?
Well, it wasn't me, so I am completely out of guesses.
Oh, okay. Wayne Bosta, he got his gift card yesterday, I'm happy to report. He's got it now, and he's free to do whatever he wants with his $50 to Amazon.com. Whee! That's right, so we will have more contests in the future. What they will be, we obviously don't know yet. I'm open to ideas as to what they are. Oren, are you open to new ideas?
Interestingly enough, I am. However, I refuse the idea of doing a contest to determine what our next contest is going to be.
Well, I think I just said that. I have no idea what it's going to be yet.
I'm just saying. I've heard that on other shows where it's like, we're having a contest to decide what our next contest should be. I'm like, that, no.
No. That's not even what I was...
Okay, that's good. We're on the same page.
I was saying it to you, and I'm open to ideas, and whether or not you're open to ideas, so we can have a dialogue on these ideas that we may or may not have.
See, I don't know. I want to know that we'd actually have some participants before we did another contest. I mean, this contest taught me that I don't think we have a huge number of people who are interested in participating in our contests. So, you know, we might want to wait a little bit, see if we can...
Yeah, I'm sure there was interest. I mean, if the numbers that I look at, you know, every other month regarding how many people we get to the site, how many downloads we've got, you know, if that's an indication of how big our audience is, I'm sure that there was an interest in there. But I'm sure also, in addition to that, there's also... And this is a feeling I get, too, sometimes with some of the things I hear... You know, with contests and such, it's like, oh, they'll never choose my entry, you know, I could never come up with anything that'll be as good as anyone else's stuff. You know, that's definitely a feeling that I have sometimes. It's just, you know, that's what happens, you know, with people. I'm sure you've had that too with some of the writing contests you've perhaps tried to, or thought about entering, is there's no way I could produce something, you know, good enough that would actually, you know, be good enough to. But that being the case. I do want to tell people to go ahead and feel free to submit their stuff. We would never tell you that your stuff is dumb. Well, at least on the air, we would never say that your stuff is dumb. Or I might chuckle about how bad it is, but all entries would be played and such, or any contest that we would have in the future. Maybe we need to have... maybe we should do a live contest at some point.
Maybe. Like I said, I'm open to a lot of different things. I would not be... Well, live contest sounds like fun once we've gotten our act together and, you know what we want it to be.
True. All right, so you know what I found on Google, as many as other people found? What'd you find?
Oh, is it the... Are you talking about the 46th anniversary of Star Trek little Google?
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, that one is pretty good. I do really
Did you do any of the interactive stuff?
No, I just looked at it.
Oh, man, there's some interactive stuff on there.
There is?
As far as I can tell, you can click on the Uhura O in the background. You can click on the console that Sulu and Chekhov sit at. And you can also click on the turbo lift door.
Yeah, look at that. You click on Uhura and it does the whole, like, Vaseline on the lens shot.
Yeah. That's the console just makes sounds and noises and firing torpedoes and stuff. The turbo lift actually takes you on a little, like, away team scene, which is actually neat.
I'm watching it right now because I'm incredibly professional. oh, now I'm going to beam them down. And, oh, man, this is, like, flashback.
Make sure you click on the red shirt, too, before you go anywhere.
Oops.
Yeah, the red shirt does stuff.
Well, there's a Gorn Pez dispenser right now.
Tribbles. Oh, there's tribbles in here? Where are they, David?
There's a rock, and I got this rock, and I hit my red shirt with a rock. God, this is like playing one of those old Star Trek like point and click adventure games.
Like the 25th anniversary.
Yeah, this is exactly as intuitive as playing those games.
There's tribbles. Folks, if I was actually able to somewhere, beat this, apparently.
Oh, the red shirt didn't die. He's just dirty. Okay.
Oh, there we go. I found the tribbles. Apparently the tribbles are hanging out. I don't know if I want to give that away, maybe. Maybe I want to let people check that out on their own.
Yeah, no spoilers, bro.
Well, I've already said other stuff, so, you know... Meh. So anyway, if you did not know that before, go ahead and check out, if you can anyway. I don't know how long it's going to be going for... just google.com at the where the typically the splash logo is. They've got Star Trek going up right now, which is based off the original series. Check it out. It's interactive. Some fun little things in there to look at and experience. Apparently the tribbles, which I did just find the tribbles, so na-na-na-na-na, David. That's right. Have you finished your away team mission yet? Or your landing party?
Are you still talking to me? Yeah. Okay. Yes, I finished that. That awesome. Little side quest is over. Unlike the Star Trek 25th Anniversary Edition, I did not get stuck at a wall of rocks. There's this part where you beam down, and there's this wall of rocks. I could not figure out how to get past it. It's like,
very nice.
Like, a rock fell and killed my red shirt, and then it was like, now what do I do?
You're just bad at shooting rocks. That's all you are.
Apparently.
Bad. I remember we've had this conversation before.
I have a shout-out that I want to make. Which is to the 10 Forward podcast over on Trekmate. I've been listening to them. So far, they're my favorite Trekmate podcast. I like them a lot. Basically, they review bad Trek episodes, which is, you know, not too dissimilar from what we do a lot of the time. And they try to find the good stuff in the bad Trek episodes, which is very different from what we do. Because I'm not about positive stuff. I am about, you know, ripping bad Trek apart.
Yes, you are.
They find the positive stuff, and they have very interesting opinions and very intelligently thought out analysis, even though very often they say things I don't agree with, and every once in a while they'll have someone on who says that, they'll have someone on who says that Ezri is a better character than Jadzia, and like somewhere a symbiont loses a lifetime worth of experience. But other than that, they're pretty rad. And I suppose this is a good way to segue into the fact that next week we will be joining the Trekmate charity podathon at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You do your own math, figure out what times that is other places.
10 p.m. Pacific is going to be 1 a.m. Eastern.
So it's 9 to 10, isn't it? I'm not crazy. I didn't just imagine that.
Yes, I'm sorry. 9 to 10, I think so. We were doing 2 hours. I thought we were doing 2 hours. It was 1 hour.
No, it was originally going to be 2 hours, but we only have room for a 1 hour slot.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so we're going then 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific and then midnight to 1 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah, and that is
and other times, other places.
Yeah, 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. GMT.
There you go. He done math good.
Yeah. Well, I didn't math. I just looked that up.
Okay. Your Google foo was strong.
I just looked up the original email. Which we haven't been having a lot of recently. We've had, like, almost no emails. I want some more emails. Send me more emails. I feel like...
Just Oren, though.
The other podcasts that I've sent emails owe me an email. I've sent, like, 4 emails to podcast this week, including one last week that Hav thought he had somehow read on the show before I sent it, which I was pretty impressed by.
That was also impressive when I asked him what the send was on it. So I was like, okay, all right. So you know what's coming out soon?
What is coming out soon?
Or actually, maybe already out. I have to check on it. TNG Season 2 Blu-ray.
It's not out yet, but they are taking pre-orders.
Right. Now, my question is, we're never going to see a theater release of any of the episodes of that, huh?
There isn't one scheduled, as far as I know, but there's no reason they might do another one. The one that they did for season one was very successful, so they could do season two. You know, with our luck, they'll probably choose Up the Long Ladder and The Outrageous O'Connor. But
well, at least my question is, what episodes would we want to see in the theater? Personally, I think Q Who would be a good one. You know,
Shades
just because it would be
Ray.
I would shoot you so hard if I was in the same room right now with
Shades
my Nerf gun.
Of Grey.
Oh my
Bob, that's basically like having like the first two seasons all in the theater at the same time. Is what that is.
Condensed into 22 or not, and how long was that episode? It wasn't very long, was it?
I mean, it's the same length as all the others. It was like 48 minutes.
Was it? Really?
Something like that.
No, come on. I gotta see this
it's
now.
The same length as the regular episode. That's no, why it's a clip show. Is because
something
they only
that bad like, has to be shorter than that. Shades of Grey.
No. Like they only had 12 minutes worth of footage, which is why they used clips from all the other episodes. If they could just have shortened the episode, they just would have done that. Like they still had to fill their regular time slot and apparently they decided to do or at least, according to some people who have talked about this, like I think Ron Moore and Michael Piller, Ron Moore may not even have been involved, but they were saying that they were told it was going to be a bottle show, which is when you have an episode where you never leave the Enterprise, so like you only use the established sets, and you don't introduce any new characters. But instead they ended up with a clip show. Which, I don't know, maybe that was necessary. But regardless of why they did it, I still hate it.
Apparently it was 45 minutes. Huh.
Yeah, it's not. It feels either really short because nothing there is any good, or really long because you're just like, why won't it end?
Yeah.
But I mean, for
how,
certain,
how I
the
thought
only
about it.
Episode I remember actually really liking is Q Who. So, like, That's really, I guess, the one they would use. I don't know for a fact. I'm sure there's another one that isn't bad.
I wouldn't mind seeing Peak Performance and Q Who. Those are the two. Those would be my two picks.
What happens in Peak Performance?
Peak Performance is where they introduce the Zakdorn in this episode, and they go to the old beat up Constellation, or excuse me, is it Constellation class? Yeah, Constellation class ship.
War Games. I always think of that episode as being called War Games, even though that's not what it's called. Yeah, that episode and Q Who would be great. That would totally work. Although it's kind of a moot point for me because I don't have a Blu-ray player and I'm not buying a Blu-ray player just so that I can get some fancied up TNG episodes. I've already seen those episodes, see them anytime I want. Having newer special effects isn't something I'm willing to buy a Blu-ray player for. David,
the dolphin,
you shut
the dolphin.
Not the dolphin.
Isn't that the one where we get to see shapeshifting lady though, like strangle Worf, and Worf almost hits her when she reverts back?
If get to is the word you would use, I would say have to. Look, the point is that season two isn't very good. Okay, it's not as awful as season one, but in some ways it's worse because at least season one is so bad. It's like, oh, look at how goofy season one was. Season two just kind of fails as a season. Because they were like, I guess we can't do season one, but, you know, Maurice Hurley still doesn't have any talent, so I guess we're just going to have this really average season, or this slightly below average season. And, you know, there's a reason why everyone, like, no one remembers season two. It's because it's, like, really boring. Whereas season one is so bad that you have to remember it. You can't not remember season one.
TV Guide was a thing back in 87, 88, right?
Probably. I was a thing in 87 and 88, barely.
Thanks, Orin. Just a gibbering mass of flesh and poo. That's what you were. That's also what I was, too, but hey.
I also had Star Trek.
Yeah. I would like to actually go ahead and throw out to our audience to, if they can, dig up for us any TV Guide articles or other articles, reviews from the premiere of Star Trek TNG seasons 1 and 2.
Go, our minions.
I'm throwing that challenge out to the audience. Not a contest, mind you. I'm just going to make that up front. There's nothing in it for you except for, you know, me giving you internet cookies. But yeah, I'd like to see that.
And we have our cookies. Because
I'd like to see what the reviews would be for that. I mean, because it's very easy for us to go look back on it and go say, oh, this is terrible. This is dumb, you know, which we do on occasion. But I'd definitely like to know what other people thought at that time about it.
Yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, because it definitely evolved from there to be better, but at the time, no one knew where it was going to go or what it was going to become, right?
Yeah. I mean, they may have had a higher opinion of it back then. Who knows?
Yeah, so. Speaking of TNG, you know what's coming? You know what's coming?
What is coming? What? Explain yourself.
The TNG 365 book is coming.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
So TNG 365 is going to be a follow-up for the TNG series that is coming after the TOS 365 book. Did I ever talk to you about this book?
No.
So TOS 365 came out, how long ago was it? Like a year and a half, two years ago, something like that? I forget when exactly it came out. But I got it for Christmas from my parents. And what it has in it is a bunch of, like, production stuff, behind-the-scenes kind of stuff in there. And it's like a book that you kind of have, like, on your coffee table that's coming out for TNG now because it did well enough to warrant a TNG book of it.
Oh, okay. What it is. I think I have heard of that. It's got, like, a lot of technical stuff and a lot of behind-the-scenes information.
Exactly. This is where I actually found out...
I'm a little unclear on that. Is it about the setting or is it about the show?
About the show.
Okay.
So it's discussing about, you know, the show being made and behind the scenes facts and stuff like that. This is where I actually found out, this is the book that I dug the information out of, that I found out where the Doomsday Machine was actually made by dipping a windsock in cement. This is where I got it from that book. So they're coming out with one for, what's that?
I was saying All Things Trek should probably acquire ourselves a copy.
Well, I have a TOS 365 copy already.
Right, right. I'm
like, I have that. I can just let you borrow it. But the TNG one, I would absolutely love to get and peruse through that. I mean, then after that, you know, you have DS9, and then Voyager and Enterprise, I guess.
How many bars of gold press Latinum is it going to cost us?
I don't know. I didn't buy this, the TOS 365, so actually I'm not sure how much it costs. But thankfully, we have Google Foo. Google. Actually, I'm going to go to Amazon. Amazon should pay me for plugging their name so many times now in this episode.
I'm sure Amazon would
original
agree with that.
Series 365. This book, Star Trek TOS 365, is going right now for $19.77 on Amazon.
That's
was $29.95.
Of course, it's been a while, but you know, it's been out for a while. But yeah, that's not too bad, especially if it's like a big coffee table book.
It's a pretty hefty book. I mean, you can see it here on... I'll go ahead and link it in the chat room. Where are you, chat room? There you are. It's a hardcover book, but it's just kind of a really nice, cool little book to have. That's got a bunch of little kind of trivia stuff in there.
Yeah, I'd like to have one of those for, you know, each of the Star Trek shows. Like, despite
maybe
my somewhat...
I know what to get you for Christmas, then.
My somewhat low opinion of some of them, I do enjoy knowing how things got to be the way they were. Sometimes, especially on like Voyager and Enterprise, like I really want to know how this happened and like who thought this was a good idea. It's important.
Voyager 365 will uncover so many things.
Well, it's important to know, you know, it's important to know who like and what happened to cause failures, because we need to know, you know, how to avoid them. Gosh darn it, David! Stop trolling. David just posted an image from the dolphin. I don't know how to pronounce it. In
I think
the
it's dauphin.
Dauphin.
It's a French word.
Yeah, it's the term for like the air. But the point is that episode is lame, and we shall never mention it again.
But we get one of the best scenes with Worf in it.
No, we don't. Quite.
Yeah, we do. No. In the sick bay, about to beat up an old woman, and who's not really an old woman.
No, stop. Stop. Stop it. You know what we want to remember Worf for? We want to remember Worf for when he calmly walked towards an exploding phaser like it was no thing and, like, deactivated it. Like a phaser that would apparently have taken out the entire deck when it exploded. It's just like, you know, that's what I want to remember Worf for.
It ain't no thing to Worf with exploding phasers.
He's just like, shifting
women, however.
He's so calm about it, too. He's not like, you know, normally I get mad at TNG when they just walk slowly towards a crisis, but in this instance it actually really worked. And that's from, which one is that? Is that The Hunted? I don't remember the name of the episode, but it's the one where the genetically engineered super soldier gets on board and everything goes crazy.
Well, he's not genetically engineered. He's conditioned.
He's...
with drugs and psychological programming.
They also altered his like, diet. Like, they did some stuff, okay? They messed with him a little bit.
Things happened, okay. Speaking of Worf, have you heard about Captain Worf?
Yes, and I'm this... Alright, so for anyone who doesn't know, Captain Worf, Star Trek Captain Worf is the working title of a pitch that Michael Dorn made to CBS about a television show about Worf as the captain of a Federation ship.
Well, he hasn't pitched it.
Yeah, he did. That was
no,
what
he
came
didn't.
From.
His agents and producer, or his agents are pitching it, is what they're doing. He sent them off to do that.
Well,
and he's been talking to other people. Like, there was a producer, like, from the article I was reading, one of the producers of some movie he was working on was saying, hey, I love to write for this. So there's been interest in the project outside of the CBS sphere so far. I mean, CBS themselves haven't been pitched any idea as far as we know.
No, I mean, no, they made the pitch. Like, I read the article. We don't know what their response to it is. But according to some fairly cryptic statements by Dorn and some other people, they were mentioning that it had, like, some, you know, some traction, and that we don't know what that means yet. But it does sound interesting. It's weird that apparently they need to have, according to this article that I read, which may not be entirely accurate, they need to have Abrams, like, permission to make this show, which I don't understand, because I guess CBS must have signed some kind of contract, because they're the ones that have the rights to making the television show. I'm pretty sure they can make a show without Paramount's approval. But I'm guessing they must have signed something. Or maybe it's just an informal arrangement, and they don't want to upset Abrams, because he is bringing in, you know, the mean dollars.
Yeah, well,
Yeah?
I really don't know if Abrams would be interested in a series, though.
Well, he doesn't have to make
with Star Trek.
He just has to say it's okay for them to make. He doesn't have to make it himself. He just has to say it's okay for them to do it. You know, obviously there are a whole bunch of other potential obstacles. But I would really like to see this. I think this could work very well, and I say could because writing Klingons is always a little tricky, and a lot of writers are just sort of like, you know, me honor, me fight. And I would want there to be more Klingons in Worf. If we could have Martok show back up, that would be amazing. And, you know, with any luck, this will retcon all references to, you know, to Jempok out of the canon forever. And we don't ever have to hear that name. And David, you're right. They're not pitching it as an all-Klingon show. But there would still have to be more Klingons. I really liked Hav's idea of a integrated Klingon Starfleet crew. But even if that isn't the case, I'm positive they'll have more Klingons. And of course, Worf is a Klingon. And it's just there are a number of writers who have a hard time writing Klingons. And it could very easily become super cheesy. And Lillian actually brought up when I was talking to her about this that Worf really helps, or is really helped by having a very high energy character to bounce off of. Because Worf is very reserved. And sometimes he can be a little boring. Which is why it worked. He and Jadzia had really good chemistry because she could be very high energy. And he also actually plays really well across from Garak in the few scenes they have together. So, you
true,
know, I think that a lot of it would depend on who his first officer was, because their chemistry would be really important. But I could definitely see it. I could see it working really well. And it's the best idea I've heard so far. And I say go for it, especially if Michael Dorn wants to do it. Is my opinion on this whole deal?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I could dig it. I suppose. I mean, I'm not so sure. I was in love at first with the idea of Captain Worf, really so much, just given a lot of the inconsistency we have with the character regarding what he's doing exactly. Plus, we have the official Countdown comic as well, which has him very much as a Klingon general, you know, leading a Klingon fleet in 2387, which is, it's 17, no, wait, how long is it? That's about 10 years after Nemesis.
Whatevs.
I'm just saying, this is a thing.
I mean, at the end of Deep Space Nine, he goes to become an ambassador. Frankly, that's not too terribly, clashing with the role, with the idea of him having a ship. I mean, especially if you think about how focused Klingons are on being active, like even Klingon politicians have their own ships, is what it seems like. So it definitely wouldn't surprise me at all if, as an extension of his role as an ambassador, he was in command of a ship. Who knows? I mean, frankly, I don't care.
Captain Worf, Federation ambassador to Kronos.
Something like that. I mean, frankly, I don't. Or he could have, served as ambassador for a while and now not be an ambassador anymore. I mean, you go and you serve for a term. And as for contradicting the Countdown comics, whatever. The amount that I care could fill the tiniest thimble. Countdown, whatever. Countdown was an apology comic that they wrote for why their story was so bad. And they were like, we're sorry our villain is so terrible. Here's this comic that explains his backstory. And I'm like, thanks. Thanks for that. I'm really glad that I knew this comic existed before I saw the movie. Oh, wait. No, I didn't.
That was really hard to ask for consistency.
I'm glad that at all the movie trailers, you had a little line of text that said, to make this story make sense, go read this comic. Because they didn't do that. Honestly, the story, I prefer the movie without Countdown. At least at that point, the movie story, even though it's still kind of dumb, it still feels like they at least, took some pride in it. With Countdown, it's kind of like, yeah, we just sort of admitted that we can't make this story work, so we have this entire other story to try to justify it. Anyway, I don't know. And again, this is not me saying that I hated the 2009 movie. I liked the movie just fine. It just had a really stupid villain. And no attempt to make that villain good is going to work.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't care if we contradict Countdown. Also,
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's official stuff. That's all I'm saying. It's official stuff.
Official.
Yeah, well,
Threshold is
on the subject of comic books and such, I need a new place to get my comics.
I recommend the internet.
The internet. Is Amazon.com a good place to get that stuff then? The reason being is that the comic stop I've been going to apparently doesn't do card transactions under $10.
Hmm.
And I wanted to go pick up like my latest, just the latest issue of Assimilated Squared, fourth issue, and they're like, "Oh, sorry, you can't, make a card transaction under $10." I'm like, "Well, this is all I want. I don't want anything else." They're like, "Well, there's an ATM." I'm like, "I'm sorry, I'm not gonna go spend $3 more just so I can get this $6 comic." At which point, I left. So, MidtownComics.com.
Local comic shops are great, but frankly, I have zero patience with the way comics are released, and it's like, I'll go into a comic shop, and because they have very limited production runs, it's like, they'll have issue 3 and 6 out of a 7-issue comic. And it's like, I'm not interested. If comic distribution is actually that poorly handled, I'll just get it from the internet, and I'm not supporting my local store, and that makes me kind of sad, but there is a point. Especially if it's a comic that's in any way obscure, is kind of what it comes down to. Like, I looked around everywhere for the Black Widow Homecoming comic, which is technically part of the Black Widow, mainline comic, even though it doesn't look like it. But it's like, no stores have that one. Like, that one is just sold out everywhere. It was like, okay, I guess it's time for the internet. I'm not gonna wait.
Midtown Comics. This is something that David just linked in here, midtowncomics.com. And I can, I guess I can make an order on here?
All right, well, you go do that. I'll do this podcast by myself.
Okay. All right, I guess we'll carry on. So the latest book of Titan, the Titan series released. And I gotta say, I haven't read it yet. I'm probably gonna order it once we're done here. And, cause I'm a big fan of Titan. But I looked at the cover of it, and all I gotta say is that, Riker is a time traveler.
What, is he ruining the past this time?
Well, no, I don't know what the plot is yet of it. The book's called Fallen Gods. And I haven't read a synopsis of it or anything like that yet. All I know is it's out, and I wanna get it, cause I'm, like I said, I'm a Titan fan. But the portrait of Riker on the front, is him when he's much younger than when he took command and taking wing. Like, it is literally a picture of him being younger. I think the picture that's on Fallen Gods is actually one of a scene from, like, First Contact, is what it is. Huh. So he's still fresh off of TNG, and he still looks a little more youthful. But I had to look at it and go double take. I'm like, why does he look so much younger and a little more gaunt? What's going on here?
Maybe
you just pull up a picture of it.
Maybe the Federation has finally, you know, put some of that Baku radiation stuff to good work, to good use. All right, that's one of the things about Star Trek that people have been bringing up more and more as our medical technology advances. It's like, why is Star Trek's medical technology in the realm of anti-aging so undeveloped? You know, why do people in Star Trek only live a little bit longer than people today? Like, you know, we're at the brink of being able to, like, double people's lifespans now. You know, by the 24th century, you figure people would be pretty much, you know, immortal, is kind of what a lot of people are saying. So, you know, maybe that's what's going on.
Riker got some flesh stretching sessions. Yes, David, he did that.
Yeah, no, don't put that toilet bowl. Don't put the toilet bowl on your head. Don't do it. That's what that thing looks like. I guess it's a seat, not the bowl. Don't put the toilet seat on your head.
Yeah. Well, immortality is a thing that's been talked and discussed, you know, for a while now. Like, I remember reading an article that was back from, like, 98, how they were talking about how they're going to have, you know, immortality be a thing in 2015, which is right around the corner. It's like, okay. And then there's some other Russian millionaire, billionaire dude who's saying, yeah, I'm totally going to make immortality a thing by 2030. So, I mean, It's obviously being pursued after, which, I mean, I think the human body, if I remember right, is actually built to last for about 190 years just on its own. The reason it doesn't is because of all the toxin nonsense and other crap that we put in our bodies that doesn't make it last that long, you know. Everyone's health is different, obviously, but, you know, just as a general rule, you know, we don't last 190 years because, you know, of all the other build-up nonsense, because we age. All that aging is from all the crap that's in us. That's, you know, pretty much just cellular waste, you know, is what it is.
I mean,
so
I don't know anything about the biology of it, really. I just know that in modern science fiction, the idea of extremely extended lifespans is getting more and more popular, and as a result, people are looking at Star Trek and being like, why doesn't Star Trek have this element of sci-fi? And, of course, the answer is because Star Trek originates in the 60s, you know, back when that element of sci-fi wasn't super common. But people still ask the question. It's like, well, why can't they live forever in the future? And it's like, well, it's an old show. What do you want from me?
Yeah, really.
It's the same reason why no one has picture phones in Star Trek. It's just not, it wasn't a technology that was really conceived of at the time. Why Riker has to describe the inside of the Borg ship to Picard in Best of Both Worlds. He can't just take some pictures on his tricorder and send them over. You know,
they just can't figure that out. Like, you know, the Curiosity rover. You know, that 2-megapixel camera we got in Curiosity is just way too much for that communicator to handle.
Look, that Curiosity is baller. Okay, don't be mocking Curiosity. That robot.
No. That was giving Curiosity props. You got to listen harder. Curiosity has a 2-megapixel camera, and it apparently has more bandwidth available for that than the communicator does that Riker had.
Yeah, probably.
For pictures and stuff. That's all I'm saying.
Do we have anything else we want to talk about before we get into the actual topic for today? We do have a topic somewhere.
Well, there's some video game stuff we can talk about that's in relation to Trek, and apparently you're playing KOTOR now.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I remember you wanted to talk about KOTOR for some reason.
It's a Star Wars game, this is off topic to the extreme, but I'm playing KOTOR 2 right now, which is a game from 2004, so super relevant, I know, right? but KOTOR 2 is a game that makes me sad because it could have been great. It has all the elements for greatness. It has really good writing, it has good voice acting, it has interesting characters, it has, a passable combat system, and it has an intriguing story. And, of course, it's set in the Star Wars universe, which lots of people are really interested in. All the elements are there. But it's not a great game. It's a mediocre game. And the reason it's a mediocre game, I think, is due to a couple of factors, but the biggest one is that they cannot... thanks, David.
Plus one, David.
But they cannot decide what is going on with your character. It's like, because you start the game and you have no idea who your character is or how you got into the situation. You don't know if you're playing the same character from the last game. You're on the same ship as the last game, but like nothing is explained to you. And that can sometimes work in games like Final Fantasy VII. Where you are not playing Cloud. You are just watching Cloud go through his story. And so it's okay for Cloud to know things you don't. But this is a game where I made this character, and I make every decision for this character. I decide who this character is, and I have no idea what this character's backstory is supposed to be. And I slowly find out the character does not have amnesia. She remembers her entire backstory. I just don't know what it is. And so I'm making all these decisions, and I have no context for any of them. And, like, I meet characters that my character knows, but I don't know them. So I'm trying to figure out how I should respond to these characters, and then it's like, that doesn't make any sense for my character's backstory. And it's just, I spend, like, the entire game being confused and being like, did I miss something? Like, and it's just a very strange choice. And in KOTOR 1, they had, like, a tutorial section where the first NPC you ran into explained to you, you're a Republic soldier, we have this job to do, let's go do it. And it's like, okay, this game has none of that. This game, the first NPC you run into is this really cryptic old woman who speaks in riddles and won't explain anything. And then you meet, the next NPC you meet is this guy who doesn't know anything. And then you meet a droid who's even more cryptic and will explain even less. And so you just wander around being like, I have no idea what's going on. But you're not supposed to be confused. Your character is supposed to know exactly what's happening. Which is why it is so frustrating that this game has all the elements. All right, I'm done. That's my KOTOR 2 rant. No more.
Do you feel better, Oren?
I do a bit.
Okay. All right. Well, to maintain a little relevancy, I wanted to mention a little bit about this Raptor thingamajig. That's I don't know how long it's been around, but it's some kind of social media. Thing for games where you can link up your game accounts to it is what it is. And this just had Star Trek Online functionality added to it a few days ago. I think it was a few days ago. But they had announced the addition of this with a Q&A with Dan Stahl, who is, as most people know, is the executive producer of Star Trek Online. Now, there's a couple of things that kind of went wrong with this, I think, or some things that are wrong with this. The first thing, most prominent, is on the day that he had this Q&A session going on, is that there was, the thing got hacked, apparently, and the whole conversation was immediately getting trolled by these hackers or such that were posting, and... I can't say that that inspires any confidence whatsoever for me to use this service. Now, the service is being incentivized by saying, hey, you can earn these rewards by... I mean, it's so much time accrued and all these achievements you can get through Raptor that relates to Star Trek Online can unlock rewards for Star Trek Online, like pets, dilithium, stuff like that. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, that's cool. That's kind of cool. But the fact that the service was hacked on the very first, you know, kind of introduction day... with this Q&A doesn't inspire any confidence whatsoever in the service at all. Needless to say, I won't be signing up for it.
I can't imagine.
What's
why
that?
Not. I said I can't imagine.
Yeah, I just was in stunned disbelief. I'm like, there's no way I'm signing up for this. I mean, I didn't have much incentive to begin with, but I thought, eh, what the heck, it's extra dilithium and stuff. Then I saw that happen, I was like, nope, not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Sorry, not going to happen.
Sounds incredibly secure, Bob. You should totally use this service. Give them all of your personal information.
Yeah, I'd rather jam a hot iron in my eye first, I think, before I do that. Now, the other thing that bothers me about this, and this is becoming more and more of a trend I'm finding with a lot of, mostly gaming companies, because I look at a lot of gaming news, and more companies are not using their own forum so much as they're using other social services like Reddit or this thing with Raptor and Star Trek Online. Yeah, I'm curious to know why that is. Why is this a more of a trend? Because I'm a little lost as to why it is. Especially since a lot of the questions that were already being posed on Raptor from Star Trek Online, players, are already ones that are in their forums.
If I had to guess, I'd say it's because they hope that they can draw in people who don't know about the game but are already using one of these services. Because, obviously if they're using their own forums, then people already basically have to be playing the game in order to use them, or at least are almost certainly going to already be playing the game. But if they're using Facebook or Raptor or Twitter or anything really, they have the possibility of drawing in people who have never heard of Star Trek Online, or at least have never been inclined to try it, but already use these services. I have no idea if that is actually, a thing. I don't know if they actually gain any new players from that or any kind of appreciable gain, but if I had to guess, I would say that was their motivation. And it's also possible, David brings up, that maybe they are hoping that they'll, after seeing this stuff on Raptor, will go over and look at the Stowe forums, and who knows, maybe they would. But I think that's probably why. I think that's, it's the whole social networking thing. Social networks attract these ridiculously huge amounts of people. And so, companies that have things that depend on a lot of people are like, man, what if we could get our stuff in there? That's my extremely uneducated opinion on it.
Well, so why did we bother advertising this at all on the Stowe site and forums that, hey, there's going to be a Raptor Q&A session going on over here? I mean, all it's going to do is generate traffic there, saying, with all the same questions that we had over on the forums. I mean, it's all they're really doing is bringing the forum experience from Stowe, or really, well, I guess in this case I'll just stick to Stowe, because I haven't really looked at a whole lot of other, ask me anything type conversations from other games. I know they exist, but I haven't really read their dialogues. I don't care about those games so much. But all those questions, a lot of them anyway, were all questions that were already on the forums, just that we were finally getting answers to some of them. I mean, some of them were not necessarily satisfactory answers, some of them were the same answers we've been getting anyway to these questions, were the same ones over on Raptor. It's frustrating. It's very frustrating.
Do you not bring the Star Trek Online forum experience to everyone else?
I don't want to do that at all to anybody.
In peaceful ways.
We come in peace. Post a troll, post a troll, post a troll. That's what that was. It's just very frustrating to go solicit feedback from another community that may or may not be playing your game, and then tell the people that are already on your official, communication forums saying, hey, we're doing this thing over here, come over here with your questions and such. It just seems very counterintuitive to me.
No, I mean,
those people that are playing a game will already know how to give you feedback and what to suggest and how to suggest it. Those people already know how to do that.
Maybe it's a publicity stunt. I don't know. Honestly, I don't. I would need to know about how these games work and their marketing ideas to really be able to give you an exact answer as to why. I can tell you that I have a burning lack of passion for it. I'm just like, whatever. They can do what they want, I suppose. I'm at the point where I hear about Cryptic doing something, and I'm like, okay, Cryptic is doing a thing. That's sort of what Cryptic does.
Well, the extension now at that point is that other gaming companies are doing it. And Guild Wars 2 is an example of this as well, as to where they're, you know, they don't actually have, you know, forums that are outside of the realm of customer support now at this point. Which is okay. I can dig that. But a lot of their now official communication is taking place, you know, through their news on their website, but then also through, like, a Reddit board as well. You know, it's like, why is this a trend that's continually occurring now? You know, I just don't get the trend. I just don't get it, I suppose. But
I mean, I don't pay enough attention to MMOs to really notice any of this. You know, you and I already had a conversation before the show even started about why I don't play most MMOs.
You don't like the WoW model.
I'm straight up, I hate the WoW model. I hate everything that has to do with grinding. And, like, the WoW model is, like, 99% grinding. And games like Guild Wars 2 aren't really that different. Let's go grind. Go kill 5 pigs. Why? Go do it. All right. It's not hard. It doesn't take any skill to do. It's just repeat this task until you have sunk a certain amount of time into this game. Because the longer you play this game, the longer your chances of giving us more money are. And it's like, okay, I guess. I feel like I've been tricked. Like, when that happens, it's like, this isn't actually fun. You're just telling me that if I do this, I will eventually have fun. Is kind of what it comes down to.
Fun is just over the horizon, Orin. You just have to keep playing.
Like, PvP aspects are actually kind of fun, because they require skill. Big raids or instances, those can be fun, because again, they can require skill. But most of the game requires no skill. Most of the game is just, go here, do this. And again, that can work if there's a story. Like I was talking about, KOTOR is not a very hard game. The only fights I've ever lost were fights where I forgot to bring my party members with me. But like, if there's no story, then again, it's like, why should I bother doing this? And most of the time, there's no story. It's just, go do this for this extremely flimsy reason I just came up with. Which is why, like, you know, everyone, or I don't know, not everyone, but a lot of people's, like, favorite quest line in WoW is this quest line called Darrowshire. Maybe that's not actually where it's called, but that's where it is. It's in this place called Darrowshire, where you're investigating what happened to this girl and her family. And that is actually a very fun quest line, even though you don't really do a whole lot. You basically run around. It's a series of waypoints. But because it has this interesting story wrapped around it, people have a lot of fond memories of it. And you compare that to go kill 5 pigs. You know, go get 5 torn murloc fins. And there are definitely way more of the latter in MMOs. Just because MMOs, by their very nature, have to be massive. They have to have all this content. And, you know, this isn't really Star Trek related at all anymore. But that's why I don't play MMOs.
All right. Oh dang, we're like near the top of the hour already. Wow.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was just like, all right, whatever. Clearly we have an hour's worth of just random stuff that we need to talk about. I'm not gonna fight it.
It's shtick, you know,
is that what it is?
Stuff. Yeah, it's shtick. Deny the shtick.
Okay.
But I think we're gonna go to a music break real quick here, is what we're gonna do, and then we'll come back and get into our topic.
We have a topic. We'll do. It's fan fictions and Sims.
Yes, it is. I came up with this by my own, by myself, too.
You did.
I'm so proud. All right, we'll be back in just a little bit, folks. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the podcast and archive of all things Trek. Music breaks have been cut out due to copyright reasons. If you'd like to hear the music, please tune in live Saturday, 1 to 3 Pacific time on Trek Radio.
And welcome back to all things Trek here on TrekRadio.net. I'm Bob.
And I'm Oren.
Hooray! You know, Oren, people can interact with this show.
Can they? I'm not sure they can. How do they do that?
Well, they can. There's two ways you can do it. Well, there's actually many ways you can do it. One is you can come knock on my door if you want to here in Everett, Washington, or on Orin's in Seattle if you want. But the more practical ways, if you'd like to interact with the show, you can send us an email at allthingstrek@hotmail.com. Also, if you'd like to interact with the show live during our broadcast, you can go to trekradio.net. Click on the community tab up at the top. There will be a drop-down menu that comes up. Just click on IRC chat room. You'll be prompted in it to enter a name. Gosh darn it. Let's try it again. All right. You go to the community tab. Then you go to IRC chat room. And from there, you'll be prompted to enter in a name for the chat room there.
Yeah.
You just click connect and you'll come on in.
Okay. Very nice.
So, all right. So our topic for today is, as we were saying before the break, is fanfic and simulations.
I don't know. David may have been joking a little bit about this, but he did ask how and where he can listen to all things Trek. So for anyone who isn't, for anyone who's listening live and wants to find the rest of our shows, we are on iTunes. You look for All Things Trek, and we have our own website, of course, allthingstrek.com. All right, that out of the way, you get back to what you were saying, Mr. Bob.
Yay! All right. So fanfic and simulations, both things I think are pretty relevant to today's Trek community, I think, for multiple reasons. One, fanfic, very relevant because, and really this is because I couldn't really come up with a really good solid definition for fanfic, because really I think fanfiction is anything and everything that is not a part of the movies and shows. Even if it's a novel or a game, you know, those are, what's that?
I mean, I don't know. That's kind of a weird definition. Typically speaking, fan fiction is something is defined by not being officially recognized by the company that owns the IP. I think it's a little strange to label books and video games as fan fiction.
Well, the reason I label those things as fan fiction is because, one, they're not a part of the official, you know, canon that is Star Trek, and they were made because those individuals wanted to make that stuff. You know, while they're still getting paid for their stuff. I mean, a lot of people are going to, I'm sure, say, you know, fanfic is something you don't get paid for. But really, these authors and such are making these things because they want to write about these, you know, these characters and these, you know, particular events because they love the setting so much.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I guess, and when you're talking about these things, a lot of the same points that apply to soft canon and can apply to fan fiction at the same time. And that's basically what the novels and the TV shows are. Not the TV shows, maybe the novels and the video games and stuff. They're licensed by CBS. They have differing levels of what is considered to be canon. I mean, heck, even the animated series is very often not considered canon. And now, of course, all the stuff that's happening in the JJ-verse, all those comics, those are apparently considered to be canon. I don't know exactly what that means.
They are? Really?
Yeah, according to what I was reading, those are considered to be canon. And again, I don't know what that means exactly. I don't know if that means that when I watch the 2013 movie, I am not going to have any idea what's going on, because I didn't read those comics.
You got to do your homework, Oren. You got to do your homework before you go watch the movie.
But there's... also, apparently, this is why some people are saying they don't think that... Gary Mitchell is going to be in the 2013 movie because he was apparently already in one of the comics. But regardless, we're digressing. I don't want to argue about what is and is not fan fiction. Regardless, they are, you know, for the purposes we can also include soft canon in this discussion.
Okay. I mean, it was just a fan has produced fiction. And really, I'm going down to the very root of the term fan fiction. That they were a fan at one point, they produced fiction that is with this universe, or pertains to this universe in some way by using, you know, a theme, setting, characters, something from it. They pulled those things and have produced a work
sure.
based on it. That's so. I'm really just kind of getting to the very primal nature of the term fan fiction. Here's what it is. I'm not taking into account at all that it's licensed by anybody at all. It's just whether it is canon or not. That's all I'm basing this on at all. Because there's just so much good stuff out there that is both, you know, written in novels that is obviously not canon stuff that I can say is a labor of love, which is why I put in the category of fan fiction. Because a lot of fan fiction that's produced, you know, it's not paid. You know, these people produce it because of their love for the IP. As a lot of authors do as well.
The traditional definition, no fan fiction is paid, because, again, the traditional definition of fan fiction is stuff produced without the consent and authorization of the company that owns the IP. So by definition, you can't be paid for fanfiction, or at least you can't be paid for it legally. The novels are, again, a little bit of a gray area. Usually, when you write a licensed novel, you get paid for it. Otherwise, you're getting ripped off there, buddy.
CBS needs their cut, for one, on that stuff, I think, right? Or Paramount, or whoever's licensing it, right? CBS does all the licensing for everything that pertains to the Prime universe, right? I mean, Paramount isn't Paramount is well, that's one of the entities.
And then that is CBS. Like the pocketbooks all supposedly take place in the same universe, but then there are a bunch of Star Trek books that were licensed by CBS or Paramount back before CBS was a thing. That are not part of the pocket universe and are just sort of standalone stuff. So anyway, that whole situation is complicated.
Right. I know from what Dave is saying in the chat room, CBS has TV rights, Paramount has film rights. That part yeah. I know. What I want to know, though, is if Paramount has to be the ones licensing any of the JJ Trek comic stuff.
I think that's
a yes that they have to be because they're the ones who have that.
I assume they have to license it because a lot of them are written by the writers of the movies. They are using stuff that J.J. Abrams and his creative team came up with, They are using stuff directly out of a Paramount movie. So I would assume that those comics would have to be licensed by Paramount and not by CBS. But it's possible they might need to be licensed from both. Frankly, I don't entirely know.
We'll have our people get on that to figure that out.
Require more research than I want to do right now to find out.
Okay, that's fair. While we're asking these questions, then you know, would you consider New Voyages to be fan fiction or not?
I don't know what that is. Explain yourself.
New Voyages by Jeff Colley.
I mean, is it a licensed work? Because if so, I would not consider it fan fiction. But it is definitely
I don't think
not...
it's licensed, but it's certainly done not at CBS's behest.
How does that work?
I mean, CBS isn't telling them not to do it. You know.
So it's not licensed. It's just something he decided to do?
Right.
I don't know what New Voyages is.
New Voyages is a production that's all volunteer based, as far as I know. I'm not sure how much money
production.
Is.
Okay, well, yes, that is totally fan fiction. It's just extremely high budget, very high, like, you know, video fan fiction. Like, there's nothing saying that fan fiction has to be, written down. Like, Phase 2, David just pointed out. I do know what Phase 2 is.
Right, that's my point.
I mean, Of Gods and Men is fan fiction, and that has some very official Star Trek people in it, but it's still not licensed.
Yes, it does.
Totally fan fiction. And a lot of it is
right, so,
extremely worth watching.
Right. Okay. So,
I want it known for the record that I haven't read a lot of fan fiction, but in preparation for this, I went out and read some fan fiction this morning for fun and profit.
Oh, really? What'd you read?
Well, I read two stories. One was Flawed Like Me by Terry Lynn, which is a story about Riker and his daughter Cassidy, which is very well written. I'm not really all that enthusiastic about fan fictions that include existing characters, but this one really works. And then the other one I read, which was the first two chapters of To the Bitter End, which is a story by Enterprise 1981. Which is a story of, like, a ship during the Dominion War and the crew on it. It doesn't have any of the pre-existing characters except for a couple of cameos. This one is not so good. It's extremely wordy, and the author is constantly reminding us that this is the Star Trek universe and it has Star Trek things in it. Like, when he describes space battles, like, I was losing count of the number of times he would identify each ship by their class. And it's like, this isn't actually all that important. Like, you know, these ships are not main ships. They are, you know, this is background stuff. You don't need to tell me every single time a Miranda class is hit. You don't need to identify it as being a Miranda class, unless it's important that it's a Miranda class somehow.
Well, good. I'm glad that you brought those points up particularly, because I wanted to talk a little bit about fanfiction at its best and then fanfiction also at its worst. And I think you actually just identified both those exact instances. Right there. So at its worst, well, not really its worst. You said you didn't like the one by Enterprise 1981 so much because of the fact it was, having already been identified as a Star Trek fan fiction, it's taking too much time and effort in relating those elements to you.
I think what it's doing, and I've seen this in a lot of fan fiction, because when I was a kid, like when I was younger and stupider, I was sort of into anime fan fiction. And so I've read a lot of, or at least a little bit of stuff that where the author is just so excited that they're writing a story about this franchise that they know that they're like, isn't it really cool? Look at all these cool things from this franchise. And they're just like throwing all these random words that they'll that you recognize from the franchise onto this fiction. And that's what's happening in To the Bitter End. Whereas Terry Lynn's fiction, first of all, Terry Lynn is just clearly a much more polished author than this guy. Like, a lot of it's just wordiness. Like, he just uses awkward wording and uses more words than he needs a lot of the time and describes things that his point of view characters probably wouldn't know, so it's a little confusing what point of view we're supposed to be from. Whereas Terry Lynn's story is very tight, very well written, and has a definite point to it. It's like the story, it's basically the story of Cassidy, who is this daughter who has some problems, and it's like being externalized as her going to this candy shop and finding this piece of candy that has a flaw in it, and it works very well. And really, Riker doesn't even need to be here. Like, you could switch out Riker with anybody, and the story would work just as well. So I think, and honestly, I wish it was. I wish that Riker was somebody else, because then I would love the story the most. The fact that it is Riker bothers me a little bit.
Do you feel that fanfic should most of the time then contain original characters and not so much characters that we're already familiar with from the franchises?
Yes, please. I feel that from my personal, and obviously this is my personal thing, and I am not bashing anyone who chooses to write fiction differently than I do, but my personal thing is that Star Trek is an enormous setting, and there is a lot of value in writing stories that take place in the Star Trek setting, because there is so much going on, and there's so much that was never explained, it will probably never be explained, it will never be touched on. You can write all kinds of stories. And I feel it's a little bit of a letdown when you decide, instead of going off and making your own thing in this universe, you just decide to write about these characters that already exist. And it's always going to be kind of weird, because especially if it's one thing if this is like a guest star that we saw once and really don't know anything about, like Dr. Salar. But if it's Riker, we know Riker really well. Or if it's Captain Picard, we know them really well. And it's just going to be kind of weird that this is a different writer writing these characters. And even if they are very good, like Terry Lynn is obviously a very good writer, it's a little bit strange as all. And that's why I like this story, because it's actually about Cassidy. It's not about Riker at all. And that's why I think it works as well as it does. And that's my own personal opinion. And it's the same thing, honestly, that you see this in not fan fiction too. Like, when a new writer comes onto an episode and they write for a character, it's sometimes a little weird, because it's like, we already know this character. And now, and David's pointing out this happens with authors too. This is the same reason why I'm not that interested in reading Star Trek novels, is that I don't really feel any need to read a story about a character I already know from some other writer. Whereas, like, it's a little different on television, because you bring in a new writer, you still have the same actor. And the actor keeps the character consistent through multiple writers. But in book form, you don't have that.
Right.
So that's why I really, really love Star Trek stories that are about original characters with occasional cameos. And of course...
Yeah, I can dig that.
And of course, because fan fiction literally has no, like, quality control, it is literally just everything is there. Which can be a good thing, because sometimes quality control throws out the good stuff, too. That's the tricky thing about it. And I mean... Technically speaking, I've done a little bit of Star Trek fan fiction with the Tales from the D&D stuff that I did. I didn't use any pre-established characters, because I was like, you know, if I do that... Well, first of all, it's an audio fiction. It's going to be really obvious that my voice actors don't sound like the established characters. there's that element to it. But also, I just... Those characters are established. They've already been developed. I have some new ones I want to use. I think that usually what it ends up with is writers who are good enough to write really good fan fiction are good enough to make their own characters, is what it comes down to.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you said. I love when other people make my points for me. Makes me feel validated some way.
What fan fiction have you read? What's your general experience with it?
Well, I haven't really read anything that I would consider top-notch stuff, but I definitely, the stuff that I have read, if I were to order it in, you know, best to worst, I would definitely put the stuff that are, that consist of original stories, the original characters at the top, with, you know, the ones involving characters that I'm already familiar with from the TV series and the movies near the bottom. Because I, like, and you said, you're absolutely right. You know, Star Trek is a huge, huge beast. It's a huge universe, and there's all sorts of stuff that we haven't even touched on or talked about. Your favorite era, for instance, from pretty much the beginning of the 23rd century all the way up to TNG, that kind of era in there that
Apparently, that's never called the lost era.
Yes, there are books about that kind of particular period of time, and I have a couple of them. You know, like, writing about that would be really cool. Seeing a lot, I do see some fan fiction of that. And just seeing the stories of characters that I've never heard of before at all, I think is a lot better than seeing characters in writing that I am already familiar with. Just because it gives more breadth to the Star Trek universe. Despite the fact that it may not be an official work, it's still cool to see these stories come up and be like, oh, yeah, totally. This is totally a cool story. This is a great adventure I'm going on here. Yeah, because I'm kind of tired of seeing other characters' adventures, you know, placed right in the middle of what we have. Now, it's a little different when I go and read something like Titan, because it's an ongoing adventure after, you know, Riker and Troy's, you know, stint on the Enterprise up to Nemesis, right? You know, it's taking place after Nemesis. So it's a continuation of some things I've seen before. But if we're talking about anything that's supposed to be taking place in the middle of or before anything that's occurred to characters on screen, I have less enthusiasm about it. Because I'm already kind of familiar with the character histories in that time.
I mean, there's basically different levels of scrutiny that you're placing yourself under as a writer, depending on what kind of fan fiction you decide to write. Or just, you know, licensed fiction, soft canon stuff. Okay, so first, you have your farthest out level, which is a story that takes place in the same universe, but doesn't use any of the same characters. Now that, you still have some scrutiny, because you still have to stay true to the Star Wars.
What have you done?
Set your phaser to maximum Freudian slip. Okay, so you have to keep your story true to the Star Trek universe. You can't have your ship go into hyperdrive, let's say. And, you know, you shouldn't have, like, bioengineered transhumanists running around everywhere. So that's just not a thing in the Star Trek universe. You know, you want to have transporters and phasers and things like that. But that's not too hard, especially if you are actually passionate about Star Trek. Chances are you want those things. Otherwise, you wouldn't be writing the Star Trek universe to start with. Right. Then you have your next level of scrutiny, which is writing for characters that already exist, but after they've already done all the things they've done. So, you know, basically nothing you do is going to change the things they've already done, and you can justify them acting differently than they do by saying, oh, well, this happened, and now Riker is different because, you know, he saw a baby whale get born, and that changed him. You know, if you want to use a really goofy example. And if you do it well, people will believe you. And there are sometimes you have characters that act kind of different than they do in their original work. And if things have happened that justify that change, then you're all right. Then your next level of scrutiny is prequels, stuff that happens before we see the characters. Because at this point, you have to show us how the characters ended up becoming the way they were. And if you have them acting really out of character, you have to be like, all right, it's sort of, there's an unspoken requirement that if you have them acting really out of character, you have to have a point in the story where the thing happens that makes them start to act more like the character we know. Even if technically speaking it's not necessary, like if you're telling a story of Riker when he was 15, he's a painter. And he really loves listening, like, reading poetry and has no interest in space.
Hello.
Sorry, hello. I had a problem over here. So if you have, like, so you could do that story with Riker the painter who never wants to go into space. But if you do, then even though technically speaking your story ends when he's 20 and there's still plenty of time for him to, or, you know, ends when he's 16, there's still plenty of time for him to go on and become the Riker we know, the fans will expect you to put a thing in there that will show him becoming the Riker we know. Otherwise, it's weird. And of course,
yeah, totally.
The J.J. Abrams story did this. The way they explained why Kirk is so different from the Kirk we remember isn't really so much because he's younger, but because his dad died. And, you know, people have made a lot of this, but basically he has no father figure. His mother is apparently very ineffectual as a parent. And so he's just a completely different person than the one we know. And so that's that. And then you have your ultimate level of scrutiny. And I don't know why anyone would ever put this on themselves to write this kind of story, because you are doomed to failure if you do this. Which is to write a story that takes place during the same time period we have already seen on the show. And then you have to be so careful. Your character has to be exactly the way they act on the show. And even then you probably won't do it, because the people have different ideas of how different characters acted. So it's, the whole thing is tricky. So those are my official four levels of fan fiction that I just invented. You know, use them for what you will.
No, that's good. I think you should transcribe that.
I should transcribe that?
Yeah, you should totally write that down and post that somewhere relevant.
David, fan fiction written entirely in Klingon is the secret fifth level that no one is allowed to know about. Yeah, okay, I'm going to go publish a guide to write fan fiction from someone who has never written fan fiction. I'm sure people will love it.
I mean, no, actually, I want to write from that point about scrutiny and such. Actually, I'd love to actually segue right into simulations.
Okay.
Actually, sure. I think that's actually a really good place to put that, actually. Because, I mean, have you done a lot of simulations before?
I've done a little
bit. You did the one with me on the Tiburon.
Okay, and we should clarify what a simulation is for anyone who doesn't already know.
Right, absolutely. So a simulation is anything that takes place, well, in the case of Star Trek anyway, a simulation is where you're taking a setting of some sort, whether that's a starship, a starbase, planet, just somewhere, or it doesn't even have to be a singular place, and making kind of a collaborative writing project out of it. So, mm-hmm. For example, I am the captain of a ship, and I have to recruit a crew. And that crew is made up of different players or writers. You know, so I would be the captain. Oren, you're my chief engineer. David, he's my tactical officer.
I don't want to be the chief engineer. I want to be the tactical
officer. Well, suck it up. Suck it up.
I want to be the tactical. All right, see, guys, now I'm illustrating a potential problem with simulations is when one of your players decides to get whiny. See what I did there?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That is one of the problems that does come up with writing a simulation. But one of the cool things I think about simulations is the fact that before we had like Star Trek Online, it was, I think anyway, one of the really the only true ways to interact in the Star Trek universe. Mm-hmm. Because you could get many people together to do it, and you were all on an adventure. A continuing adventure that segued from, you know, mission to mission to mission to mission. Those missions are just, you know, stories. They're which are essentially stories that are written by all the players on the ship or base or planet or wherever your crew of writers happens to be. And they would all seamlessly translate into one another to produce a season. And then from there, a series is what it is.
Right.
Now, one of the unfortunate things about simulations sometimes is the fact that they move very, very slowly because what you don't have everybody necessarily working together at the same time.
Yeah, and also with a simulation, communication is incredibly important. You really need to make sure everyone knows what's going on, and if you have two characters who want to do two like mutually exclusive things, they really have to, you know, reach a mutually beneficial compromise. Because it's like, otherwise people are going to start getting upset, and if they don't know what's going on, they're going to be confused. Like in our simulation, towards the end, the one that I joined with you, we ran into that other crew. And I had no idea what was going on with those guys. I was like, why are they here? Why is every story they post about how much more awesome they are than us? I don't understand why they're doing that. And apparently they'd worked that all out with you, but I didn't know anything about that. I was very confused.
Well, right, the way a simulation typically runs is you have the captain or whoever the quote-unquote Play by email, by the way, David, is a type as well as forum based. I mean, there's also SMS, which is another PHP based format. But yeah, those are all different types, as well as there's just chat rooms where people go into and go in there and do their stuff. This particular one was a forum one that we were doing. But no, this is not pen and paper and dice based stuff. This is all online, like on a message board, type simulation stuff.
I think a lot of the same lessons on the pencil and paper, like the pen and paper based stuff, I think those lessons pretty much apply to, in the same way. I mean, the fact that you're not rolling.
Some of them. I'm not sure all of them would. The difference between having a pen and paper setup versus having like a message board setup is that the players for the pen and paper part of it are pretty much all there in the same room, and it's a session being had.
No, sorry. That's not what I meant. I meant that you can have play by post RPGs. Like, that's thing some people do, and they still technically use dice, or a dice rolling software, but in those instances, I think most of the same lessons apply. I wasn't talking about everyone sitting around the table. That's a completely different animal.
Gotcha.
Which we already did a podcast on, actually.
Yeah, we did.
But
that was
a good
one. I like that one.
For sims, my advice for anyone wanting to do a sim, and again, this is coming from someone who has very little experience with sims, so you take it as you will. I think that even if you are not playing, you know, with any sort of hard rules, you should still have a game master whose job it is to oversee the story.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that person should be a character. I think that person should just be the role of the game master, because otherwise you end up with a bunch of different people who, unless they are all in perfect communication with each other, will end up taking the story in a bunch of different directions. Whereas if you have the game master, or the story master, if you want to call him, because maybe it's not really a game at that point, the story master, his job is to keep everything coherent and be like, okay, so you want to take this shuttle off to the planet and do some scans on the ruins. This other guy, he wants to take the ship. He's not interested in the ruins at all. He wants the ship to go off and, like, patrol the neutral zone. How about we combine these two stories and have it be that this planet is on the neutral zone and there are some Romulan interested in these ruins? And that's the story master's job. Otherwise, you're going to have players who, intentionally or not, are going to be stepping on each other's toes. And I think that I haven't actually seen a lot of simulations with the story master as a role, and I can kind of understand. I don't know if that's a role people necessarily want. Because everyone, when they join a sim, they have their character they come up with, and like, I really want to play this character. So maybe you want to do like a rotation of story masters. It's very important, I think, and I really think that it should be something that you should look at if you're starting a sim. Because I really like sims.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, in theory, but I've never actually participated in one that lasted for more than a few weeks, which is. Except for yours, obviously, it lasted for a long time. But when I joined it, it then ended. It ended 3 weeks later.
It did.
And every other one.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. That's actually really much covers pretty much my point of where a lot of sims fail. I think is because there isn't a lot of that. There isn't someone who's kind of more of a peripheral agent looking in and going, all right, so all these events are taking place, or these players want these events to take place. How can we sort this out so that it's all a coherent story and everyone's going to get what they want, right? You know, it's like no one has that referee, as far as I know, or at least in the organizations that I participated in. None of it was like that. Now, at the other end of the spectrum from that, I've also participated in simulations where they were very open. There wasn't so much a referee, which in most of the case, the referee was the captain of the ship. You know, they were the one who was coming up with the overall story plot, where the ship was going, what the mission of the ship was going to be at that point. And then the players can kind of act, you know, within that framework. One simulation I was a part of actually had it the other way, where, the crew was actually dictating what was going on the ship based on certain actions. Now, obviously, there were some, you know, stipulations in place saying, you know, don't be stupid with it, because then everyone can go like, no, that's dumb. We're not going to be doing this thing. I thought those ran a lot better because there was more consensus on what was going to be happening, and also allowed a lot more creativity for what was occurring within the crew as well. You know, just amongst each other, as well as how they were interacting with their environment. Because a lot of the time, if you're being, a lot of the stuff's being dictated to you, it doesn't allow you to really explore the setting so much. Right. I mean, it could be something as simple as, you know, you're a science officer, you step off the shuttle, and suddenly a slug falls in your face. You know, it could be something as simple as that. Or it could be something as crazy. What's that?
Nothing. I was being snarky.
What'd you say? I didn't catch it.
I said, I don't want a slug to fall on my face.
Well, then you don't have to write that if you don't want to. But, you know, yeah, but there's just a really a huge spectrum regarding simulations that are out there. I think the ones that don't do very well are the ones that have very rigid, you know, schemes of how things are supposed to be run. I think if you let people go ahead and, you know, express their, you know, freedom and creativity as an author, you'll get much better play out of it in a simulation.
Right. Now, one of the, now, the reason I'm coming from the angle that the story master shouldn't be a character in the sim is that there's something of a conflict of interest there, where it's like, if you're the story master in the sim, you're sort of going to be inclined to give the stories that you want your character to be doing precedence over what the other players want, whereas if you are, you know, independent of all that and are not... you don't have a horse in that race, as it were. You can be, you know, as impartial as you need to be. And again, this is my RPG pencil and paper game, you know, mentality informing what I'm saying here. Because in RPGs, the GM having his own character is like a huge no-no, and is sort of a thing that we joke about as like something only a stupid person would do. Because Sims are obviously different from RPGs. But I still think that it works better that way, because that way the story master is more is inclined to be impartial, and other players, I think, are more inclined to be cooperative with the story master because he has an established authority position, whereas they're less likely to be cooperative with another player who they see as an equal. And they're like, I don't want to do what that guy says. That guy's not the boss of me. He's not my real dad. Whereas the you know, the story master can be your real dad if he has to. And it works out fairly well. Because I found that the biggest problem with cooperative storytelling is personality clashing. And I think that a good story master can negate some of that. And, you know, of course, you could always go and get your like, psychology degree and then go get a master's. And that would probably prepare you for it pretty well, too. You know, just go for the 5-6 years of schooling and college debt. And then you'll be ready to run your very own sim. I can recommend a couple of schools. Okay, that went somewhere really weird. I don't even know what I was doing with that.
All right.
Apparently, I have opinions on Sims. Who knew?
Well, I think it just has more to do with the fact that you're an aspiring writer, and it has to do with writing. I mean, I just think the whole idea of collaborative writing is a fascinating one, but it's not one that I've done it for, you know, a decade. I have a decade of experience doing them. But it's something I have yet to be able to master, per se, because a lot of time it's different. And you're right when you say it has a lot to do also with personalities that come into conflict with each other. I mean, that's pretty much how I've seen a lot of simulations end, is because such and such can't get along with such and such because such and such did, you know, something that was really dumb or stupid or in their opinion, and as a result they can't do this other thing with their character. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've certainly seen a lot of that go on. So... I mean, and that probably has a lot to do with the fact that the people that you see thrown into a lot of these simulations also don't know each other at all, you know, either. Yeah, sometimes the crews on these things can be massive, too, you know.
Sometimes not knowing each other is better, because sometimes people are more inclined to be polite to people they don't know, and that means that you don't get all the baggage that your traditional friends group is carrying around. So sometimes that can be a good thing. I'm just saying. As someone who has gamed with groups that had a lot of baggage before, you don't want any of that in your sim, let me tell you.
Nope. Not a thing you want.
I actually had another fanfiction series I wanted to talk about if we're done with Sims. But if you have more things to say, sure. With Sims, go ahead.
All I really gotta say is to anybody who might be looking at this, looking at maybe joining a sim after kind of our discussion about it being kind of, you know, collaborative writing effort. If someone doesn't want to go out and like write their own fan fiction, for instance, but still want to participate creatively. Gosh darn it. Yeah, that one. Creatively within the Star Trek universe, simulations are certainly an option, but I would definitely spend a lot of time and effort into looking at past writing that they've done and how long they've been around and who's involved, seeing how what their discussions are like outside of their mission posts, things like that. I'd look at, you know, the total of it as opposed to just little pieces of it.
And, of course, I also would recommend picking up a copy of one of the various Star Trek pencil and paper RPGs that are floating around. And giving that a whirl if you're into pencil and paper RPGs, because those can be a lot of fun. Just set your game before replicators, okay? Do yourself a favor. Don't have replicators. Replicators will ruin everything. Also, just as a reference, to get even more in character for this, I actually started writing some fan fiction before we started today. I was cheating a little bit.
Oh, really?
I'm writing another script for a little mini Tales from the DMZ thing, because a G&T show is doing an informal contest to who can make the best bio for their Star Trek Online character. And my Star Trek Online character is technically a Vulcan named Seve, so I am interpreting that in the loosest way possible. And I'm writing like a bio for the character Seve from Tales from the DMZ, and I'm using the conceit of this is an interview where she's talking about what happened and all that junk. So I'm writing that script. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'll get that recorded in the next month or so.
By the way, Tales of the DMZ, that is a radio audio production that Oren was heading up. And we do have, how many episodes? We have four? Five?
Yeah, episodes.
They're on our website.
It's a little confusing because like episode two and episode three were like originally a two-parter. And they're still kind of a two-parter, but I was a little unclear on how exactly I was gonna write them, like on how I was gonna title them. But anyway, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I had some good voice actors involved with that. So if you want to listen to it, it's on our website, allthingstrek.com. I would definitely be happy for anyone who wants to give it a listen. But all right, so the fan fiction series that I want to talk about. Oh, and Mr. Terloki in the chat room. He's talking about exactly what we were talking about. People wanted to do something that wasn't really in line. Some people wanted to do more Star Wars-y stuff, and it sounds like he and maybe some other people wanted to do Star Trek-y stuff, and it didn't really work.
Well, that's where, like we were talking about, where there'd be the story master would be the guy, you know, or the person, you know, dictating that sort of stuff about, you know, this is the setting. And then if there's any question about anything like that, they would be the one to field those questions and give answers to them. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, like if they're wanting to do something more Star Wars-y, you know, then obviously you'd want to direct them to a Star Wars thing, you know. But if you as the game master want to do something that is very specific or so, you know, I would very much just make sure that you set those expectations up front that this is what this is going to be. Here are the elements of it. You know, now you can play in this or not, and how flexible you want to be with that is entirely up to you, because you're the one who's in command of this universe, as it were. So,
all right. So anyway, the fan fiction. This is an audio series, another audio drama. It's called Starship Excelsior, and I've mentioned it briefly on the show before, but I'm going to do it again because it has some pretty good examples of some things that I think kind of commonly go wrong with fan fictions. And this is a very high production value audio show. This involves a lot of voice actors, some of which have professional acting credits, and a lot of them are very talented. And the writers are not bad either. They have come up with an interesting story. It is set on the Starship Excelsior, which is probably the third ship to carry the name. It's actually a Sovereign class. Apparently they play Star Trek Excelsior on Trek Radio, says David. I didn't know that.
Yes, they do.
But it's a Sovereign...
Come on, Oren. Get more familiar with the schedule, man.
it's set on a Sovereign-class starship after the Dominion War called the USS Excelsior. And it's got a very interesting story involving the Bluegill aliens from Conspiracy and the Borg and a lot of stuff. And, like, also some and some, you know, some stuff involving Section 31. And it's very interesting. Where it starts to falter is, oh, and it also does something really cool that I was not expecting, where a character dies that I did not expect to die, and I'm not going to say who it was because that would be spoilers. And I had to say it like that. I am required in my contract to say it like that. but it was, that worked very well. Where it starts to falter is that I think the writers realized that this thing they had that was working they thought it would work better if they turned it up to 11. And so everything gets really extreme. Like, the character, they have, like, you know, they have, like, characters who have some conflicts with each other, right? And they were like, well, what if instead of having conflicts, these characters just flat out hated each other's guts? You know, and then it's like, all right, well, it's kind of getting hard to justify how these characters could possibly work together if they actually hate each other that much. And then it's like, you know, sometimes good characters, they buck authority. They don't always, you know, they sometimes do the right thing, even if they've been ordered not to. And they're like, well, what if this character just never obeyed orders? Like, the captain of the ship, by later in the series, is basically just doesn't care when Starfleet calls them and says, we need you to do this. They're like, he's like, well, whatever. You know, Starfleet, they can go do what they want. I'm going to go do my thing. And it's just, it's sort of like in this universe, it's like nobody follows orders. And it's like, how could this command structure possibly stay intact if it's almost mirror universe level of disobeying of orders. And it's just goofy. They had something that was working, and they were like, "Let's turn it up to 11." And they, you know, they did a little bit of shark jumping. And then of course there's also just some weird continuity issues where, like, there was one part where it skipped ahead, and I was like, I had to go back and make sure I hadn't missed an episode because I had no idea what was going on. And it, like, then it skipped into a flashback with no real indication that it was flashback time, and like. That's really important in an audio drama because since I can't see anything, I don't, like, in a TV series, there would be a visual cue that this was a flashback or that we were on a different ship because everything would look different. But in an audio drama, especially an audio drama with a huge cast like Starship Excelsior has, I have no idea if these people who are talking are supposed to be different characters or if they're just people on the ship whose names I had forgotten. And I was just like, what's going on? Are we in eventually figured out we were in flashback mode. And so, again, it's a show that started to fall victim to its own success at the end, which I think is a problem with fan fiction. And a lot of fan fiction are, of course, of much lower quality than Starship Excelsior, but they have the same basic problem. And it's the same basic problem that The Bitter End had that I was talking about earlier, where they basically... You know, there's just too much of a thing, and they don't know how less is.
We've written too greedily and too deep.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've dug too deep into the Star Trek, you know, mythos, and you know now like Roddenberry has risen from his grave, and he will devour us. He devours 1D3 fan fiction writers around.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so all right, that's all. That's all I got. I'm out. I'm done. I hope that.
No, that's good. That's fair. I like that.
I hope that was inspiring, or at least informative. But...
This is why we keep you around, because you can make these points about writing and such.
Well, I can pretend I know what I'm talking about. At some point, I'm gonna.
You have a degree in everything about writing, don't you?
I have an English degree. It's in my desk somewhere. I could dig it out.
Yeah. See, you got credentials and stuff.
Yeah.
So you know what you're talking about, man.
I totally wrote a play once. That really transfers over well into novel writing. It's basically the same thing. You know, stage writing, novel writing, whatever.
I don't believe you. I don't have a writing degree, but I know the difference, sir.
But I would definitely recommend that you check out, you know, stuff by authors like Terry Lynn. Her fiction is very good. And, you know, when you're reading fan fiction, you just have to be prepared that you're going to get some stuff that's not very good. And you have to be like, okay, this stuff's not very good, and stop reading it, and then go read something else. Because, like, if you get all, like, fed up with it, you're not going to get to the good stuff, because basically the fanfiction world is putting it on you to find the good stuff. They aren't saying this is the stuff that's good. Now, granted, sites like Ad Astra do have reviews, but those are of questionable reliability. You know, it's the same thing where, like, technically the Foundry does have reviews, but you know how reliable those are.
Yeah.
Bob, are you the one-star bandit?
Actually, if you believe some of if you believe one in particular individual from the podcast UGC audience, I am the two-star bandit.
Yeah, I heard they got mad because you gave them a two-star review. Because a two-star isn't the same thing as it is to them.
Well, yeah, that just has to do with the way their review and rating system is that there isn't really... I mean, they give you the option of pretty much rating 1 through 5 stars, but there is no, like, guide or anything like that or any standardized way of interpreting what those stars actually mean. I mean, like, my personal thing is, like, you know, 1 star is this is ultimate fail. 2 is you need some work. 3 is this is pretty average. 4 is above average. 5 is like, hey, you should totally go apply for Cryptic. Cryptic, you should hire this guy. You know, that's how I interpret the 5-star scale. You know, other people interpret it as, you know, it's like... I mean, is it a 4-star? It means that, you know, it's good. You know, 5-star is really good. Anything that's 3 or below means it's crap. You know, it's like there's that's sometimes how it's also perceived as well, which I understand. That seems to be how it's interpreted, you know, anywhere at all, which is, you know, below 70% tends to be a failing grade.
I think that's because I think that the reason why we have that is because so many game sites basically just hand out high scores, and so if they have created the idea that if they review below a 70, that it's like, oh no, this must be terrible.
So
I tend to be much more conservative. If I'm rating something on a 1 to 10 scale, if I give it a 10, it had better be like the best example of its kind.
My socks, they've been knocked off.
You know, like I pretty much agree with SF Debris' rating system, where like you're rating a system from 1 to 10. 10 is the absolute best episode in the series, or at least an episode that is tied. Like, In the Pale Moonlight is the 10 of Deep Space Nine. Whereas Sacrifice of Angels is a good episode. I really like it, but it's not a 10. It's not perfect. It could be better. There are some things about it that are not great. So anyway, now I think we are at the end of our time, and I hope everyone enjoyed that. We had our hour of just talking about random stuff, and then we had our surprisingly spirited fanfic and simulation discussion by me. I was not expecting to have that much to add.
You're a writer. I expect you to have all that stuff to add. I went into this fully knowing you'd have stuff to say.
But I haven't read a whole lot of fanfiction. Especially, well, at least not Star Trek.
I'm gonna call this the Star Wars April Fool's effect. That's what I'm going to call it. And here's why. It's because we had done our April Fool's episode. We pre-recorded it, and you said you wanted to do a Star Wars episode for April Fool's episode. I'm like, okay, I'm not sure I'm going to have much to say regarding Star Wars. I'm not really big Star Wars fan as much as I am Star Trek. But then when I came to do the episode, I had a lot to say. I was on fire. So I'm gonna call it the April Fool's Star Wars effect.
I'm really looking forward to next year's April Fool's. I have some ideas.
Do you?
But as David said in the chat room, check out the GNT show website. They have a forum with a number of links to good fan fiction. So they've done some of the quality stuff, control stuff for you. You can be pretty sure that if they link to it, it's at least decent.
Yeah. Also, I put their link there in the chat. I'm also going to supply everybody with, in case they don't already know by now, our show website. And from there, if you go to the show's link, you can actually go ahead and check out Tales from the DMZ, which you do have posted up.
Yeah. All right. I think that's about all I got to say. Shall we call it a day then?
I guess we can do that.
All right. Well, then this is
fine.
Fine.
You can stop the show now. All that stuff. Fine. Yeah, actually, you don't have to. You know why? Because I'm in control of the stream.
But I need to go. I have places to be that are you not say where that, I am right now.
But behold, I have tethered you here through the power of broadcasting software.
Yeah, I have to escape to an island wilderness.
Oh, fine. I'll play you out with some Stereo Hearts. How's that? How about that? Will that do? All right. Here's some Stereo Hearts by Gym Class Heroes. See you all next week.